probably between 2009, 2011. A lot of disease in the vines of Napa Valley. And of course, if there is disease, you can't grow good grapes. You can't make wine. Wineries can't make their bottom line. Farmers suffer.
Welcome to the Aviation Mentors Podcast, the podcast that takes your dreams of flight and turns it into reality.
Sponsored by Strass Financial, financing your flight training.
For pilots, by pilots. I'm Brandon Martini, a commercial pilot and flight instructor.
And I'm Carson Vasquez, I'm a private pilot.
Whether you're a seasoned pilot or beginner with dreams of flight,
Aviation Mentors is your source for expert insights, industry trends, and inspiring stories.
So fasten your seatbelts and prepare for this incredible journey through the skies.
And stay connected with us on social media for exclusive content.
And visit our website at www.aviationmentors.com and let us be your co-pilot on this adventure. Welcome back, everybody, to another awesome and, of course, amazing episode of the Aviation Mentors Podcast. Thank you so much for joining us today. We have an absolute special guest. We have Jonathan Bastrin today. Carson, do you know what he's going to talk about?
I do know he's going to talk about. We actually just had a little pre-flight brief. So
I love it. I love
it. It was cool.
Well, Jonathan, welcome to our podcast. Today, we're going to discuss kind of your background in aviation. And more importantly, something that everybody on this podcast has probably heard me talk about a little way too much when it has nothing to do with aviation, and that's wine. And everyone knows that I got my WSET level 2 SOM earlier this year. And I recently went to Napa wine tasting, and we met Jonathan through a friend of a friend. And we ended up meeting for the first time today to talk about coming on the podcast. And we decided, you know what? There's no better time than now in this world. So welcome, Jonathan. Thank you so much for being here today.
I appreciate it. Thank you so much for taking the time, setting this up. It's a real pleasure to talk about, you know, how these two different industries correlate, and especially, you know, what it means to me and how big of a part of my life it's been since 2005. Yeah.
Oh, wow. It's quite a while. And I know Carson always asks a specific question to every single guest that we have. And in about 10% of our episodes have guests. The other 90, we ended up just kind of jibber jabbering. But everybody who comes on, Carson always asks one question. So I figured we'd leave it for a surprise.
So every time I ask, it's my favorite thing to ask because I love seeing people's face when they tell the story and, you know, hearing about it. So how did you get into aviation? How did you become a pilot? How did that all start for you?
Oh, man. Kind of really odd. So first generation born U.S. kid. My parents both born and raised in Haiti. My dad was a pastor and then became a clinical psychologist. My mom was in nursing. My sister's currently in nursing as well. And when I was graduating high school, I had absolutely no idea what I wanted to do, where I wanted to go. And I figured, let me just pick the most interesting thing with the options available to me. And that, you know, being at a private school, especially my dad's being very religious. And the most interesting thing to me looked like aviation. Didn't want to go into history. I didn't want to go into teaching. Didn't want to go into medicine or anything like that. And honestly, I wanted to be, before even thinking about seriously going to college for aviation, I always wanted to be a fighter pilot, especially like all those movies from the 90s and 80s and stuff like that. So I applied for college and got into the program, got my medical, and then it was off to the races. From there, went through flight school. I was progressing really well. I will say I did fail my private license the first time, but the second time and through multi-engine, commercial, and not VFR, but IFR. After going through college and getting through my sophomore year, you know, I needed to get a job, and my parents were going to finance my fun and whatnot. So I was looking for different jobs in the area, and a friend of a friend introduced me to a guy who was working at Meadowood Resort. And that was my first job in hospitality. And as tough as it was, as grueling as it could be, it was an amazing experience because I got to learn how to interact with people of all different walks of life and at different levels, especially when it came to finances, because, you know, it's a lot of Napa Valley. I was there for about 5 or 6 years. I got comfortable with the cadence of hospitality and moving with purpose and, you know, getting things done and figuring out how to figure out, you know, problems. Kind of outgrew myself there. I knew I wasn't going to get promoted to like any kind of like higher end position. There wasn't a lot of turnover with that. So I shifted to Calistoga Ranch and Salash Calistoga. So I worked front desk at those resorts and also in-room dining. And then from there, I switched to Luna Vineyards. And Luna Vineyards was the first winery that I worked at in hospitality where I was in sales.
Quick question. You said that you switched careers kind of after you got your private, your instrument, and even your commercial certificates. Why didn't you end up doing a career in aviation? And why'd you go down the wine path?
Realistically, when I graduated college, I was already like 160-ish in debt. By the end of my junior year and moving into my senior year, I understood that it was going to cost a healthy another six figures for me to get without any kind of like help, you know, letter of recommendation, anything like that, which, because I know, especially in the early 2000s, you got to, oftentimes you got a job, not only based on your qualifications, but because somebody recommended you, somebody gave you a foot in the door, and then you just crushed the interview and everything like that, and you got in. So understanding that I didn't want to spend that, even though I know I could make a good amount of money, I didn't want to spend that much more time in training to rack up that much more debt, to get into a career that I knew that, especially working my way up from the bottom, in those times I would be gone a lot more than I'm home. Nowadays, I know there are a lot more options. There are, you know, definitely a lot of easier avenues into getting into a career in aviation. But back then, the financially, it just didn't work for me and wasn't going to be able to get any more loans. And I knew that with my current living, I could pay my bills. I could still take trips. I could pay for my loans and everything like that. So I decided to transition into hospitality fully. And that was a rough one to go through with my parents. The time and money they invested and everything like that. I even took both my parents on flights and everything like that so they could experience and, you know, see that, you know, my efforts weren't going to waste. But at the end of the day, and fortunately having conversations now with my parents, is like, you know, they understand it was for the best that I made the move that I did. And, you know, every now and again, they enjoy some wine. So it was to their benefit too.
Exactly. You know, if you wouldn't have made that switch, we would have never met you.
Yeah.
So, and you're on the Aviation Mentors podcast. So
yeah, it all comes around full circle, right?
Definitely.
Back to aviation.
You get back to aviation somehow. And whether it be through on purpose or little sidebars like this, it's kind of fun. I took some notes when we were kind of talking prior, and my whole thing was I kind of wanted to know how the wine industry ships wine. I figured that it all has to be like overnight ground. And you actually let me know that they actually ship overseas via airplane, and they ship nationally via airplane as well. How exactly is that done?
With shipping, different wineries, they'll purchase different shipping containers from different producers, so on and so forth. Styrofoam, so on and so forth. And then it will have ice packs that are put, depending on how large the pack is, it could have one, it could have several, a 12-bottle shipping box. And then from there, it's basically air temperature controlled from start to finish. So typically your wine's coming from a warehouse in a winery. That's always temperature controlled. It's picked up in a temperature controlled truck. It stays in a temperature controlled warehouse. It gets in a plane, temperature controlled environment. And then the same process goes from truck right to your doorstep, all the way to the signature, of course, because it's alcohol.
What kind of temperature does it have to stay at? And is it like, if it gets past a certain temperature, is it ruined or?
Ideally, you want your wine to stay like no more than like 60-ish degrees, because once you get like past 65, you know, and especially into the 70s and up, you're going to cook your wine. It's going to be stewed. Your cork will start to push out. It can leak. These are the type of issues that wineries around at least America, at least California, wherever they shipped nationally and internationally, these are early days on issues that they found in warmer temperatures. And same way when it gets really cold, because I mean, I've worked at wineries where we have wine club members in Alaska. We will ship to Canada. There are wineries that I've worked at where we ship to Canada. We have wine club members that are in Asia, Europe, Australia, but ideally 50 to 60 degrees. And after that, most wineries will have an easy return policy that if you get a cooked bottle, corked, pushed out, something like that, it's ruined, send it back to them. They will send you another bottle to replace it on the winery as a good faith gesture. And especially, it's an investment. Wine is absolutely an investment and not a cheap one, especially not these days.
You should have seen my credit card bill when I got back from Napa. I didn't even realize I spent that much. I'm not going to even say how much money I spent. It was ridiculous.
Oh, no, yeah. I call Napa Valley a posh version of Vegas because you come back and you're like, what the hell did I spend this money on? But then with wine, you know, depending on, you know, how you enjoy it, it's something that you enjoy as time goes on. So it's something that kind of keeps on giving, if you will.
I mean, I did get, I think, like 60 bottles that I get to put in my wine fridge that is 144 that's already mostly full.
You have 150 in there already.
Yeah, actually, you're probably right because I stack them on the top.
Mm-hmm.
Probably has more than 104 already. Yep. Yeah.
I've seen it. It's a full-size fridge. It's
My son, he's 13, and he said, I think you need a new wine fridge. And he just asked for a second one. And I've got this room, and I'm really big into like symmetry, as you can see with all the stuff behind us.
Oh, yeah.
And he's like, wouldn't one go right there? It would be like perfect aesthetically for you. And I'm like, where did you even learn that word aesthetically, Austin? You're 13. And it's like, am I wrong? It's like, no, you're totally right. You're totally right. So
you want like a wine cellar in that little.
I mean, I really want a wine cellar. That's
a little tip for you. If you don't have any more kids and you end up having a spare bedroom, you can turn your bedroom into a wine cellar. I've seen it done. It's not very expensive. And you can put whatever kind of rack setup that you want to. You'll want to get dual pane windows, blackout curtains, and seal up all the cracks. Seal your air conditioning vent and get one of those standing air conditioning units that you put in the room. You have to seal up your doorway and then put whatever racks you want in there, and you'll maintain 50 degrees in there, no problem. As long as you have good insulation in the house as well. I've seen it done. It's not expensive. And it's good use for a room, especially if you end up having that space.
Since I'm not having any more kids, it's looking like I can take my spare bedroom. But my mom and my sister, who come and stay over my house all the time, they're not going to be very happy with that.
Just give them extra blankets.
Give them extra blankets. Tell them to sleep with the wine.
They'll be fine. Honestly, and if they drink wine, that's what we call a liquid blanket. So they'll be all good. One more tip for you, though. If you end up needing to purchase another wine fridge, over the past 3 or 4 years, I've purchased 4 wine fridges off of Facebook Market. The largest one that I purchased, it's a 300-bottle fridge, and I got it for $150. All I needed to do was recharge the Freon, which was like $25 from Amazon in half an hour of my time.
That's a win. I mean, that's a key buy. That's a
for
win.
The storage you actually need.
For the storage you actually
then
need.
Then you can put the one you have now on the outside.
Exactly.
In your garage or something.
Yeah. Yeah. By the way, you know what temperature I keep my wine at, Carson?
60.
55.
55, all right.
You know what time it is, Carson?
Time's a brain.
It's time to talk about one of our favorite companies.
Which company would that be?
Aviation Mentors is excited to be sponsored by the one and only Stratus Financial, dedicated to supporting the next generation of future aviators.
You know, Stratus Financial really understands the financial challenges that students face in pursuing their aviation dreams. That's why they offer student loans specifically tailored to aspiring pilots.
With competitive rates and flexible repayment plans, Stratus Financial helps take your aviation education to new heights.
So go visit their website today at www.stratus.finance. Just to be clear, that is not .com, it's .finance. And embark on your journey towards a sky full of possibilities.
Carson, it's time to get back to what we do best.
The show.
The show. I've got one more question for you, and then we're going to wrap it up for the day. When we were talking earlier, you mentioned that I think in 2011 or something, you said there was some major disease in the vines in Napa Valley, and you actually took a flight with photographers and you scanned the vines. I would love to hear about that flight, what the flight entailed, and really what you were scanning for, and what was it like flying over Napa? I've flown over Napa one time in my Icon A5 coming back from Vacaville. Flying in, what's the lake to the east of you? I can't think of the name of it.
Lake Berryessa.
Lake Berryessa. It's where all the Icon flights start out at, by the way. One of our friends works there.
Good landmark.
Yeah, it's a great landmark. Yeah, so that was the only time. So I'd love to hear about that story if you can tell us about it.
Absolutely. So I believe the range was probably between 2009, 2011. It's been a while. It's been some time. But a lot of disease in the vines of Napa Valley. And of course, if there is disease, you can't grow good grapes. You can't grow good grapes. You can't make wine. Wineries can't make their bottom line. Farmers suffer. That's how, you know, ownership of wineries change over and a lot of big conglomerates start buying different properties. But I had the opportunity, a friend of mine when I was in college, he was commissioned by another gentleman who owned a Cessna 210 Turbo, and he had a camera mounted in the bottom of the fuselage, 3 different cameras mounted in the bottom of the fuselage, of course, pointed down to take different types of topographical pictures of Napa Valley. Firstly, flying over Napa Valley, it's absolutely beautiful. It's, you know, during the springtime when it's absolutely all green, rolling hills, you can get lost there just flying around. That's part of the reason why you have all the hot air balloon tours going around. It's just beautiful scenery. With those cameras, though, you're able to take different layers of pictures. So pictures of just the leaves in their current condition. Then you can actually take kind of like an X-ray picture of the vines. And in those X-rays, you're able to see if it actually had disease based on the color that the monitor emitted based on where you're taking the pictures. So it would have different portions that were blue, different portions that were yellow. The portions that were red had the most disease. And those were the areas where they would rip those vines out, rip them out, shut them down, test the soil, and then replant new vines so that they can keep going with production in the following years, which at least 3 to 5 years. But with that flight, we took about a 3-hour flight. So we flew from the north end to the south end of Napa Valley in basic grids, if you will, just north to south, long horizontal grids so we could take different pictures of different vineyards because different wineries and different farmers actually put together the funds to pay this guy to let them use his plane, or to commission the plane to actually take these pictures of their farms so they can make sure that they can continue to exist.
It's really cool.
So with that, I mean, it costs some money, but in the grand scheme of things, it saved them millions, especially.
And how does it actually save them millions? They know, hey, we need to kind of cut out these vines so they don't spread. Is that what they're basically looking for and doing?
Not only spread, but the possibility of wasting time putting money and a lot of water, especially into growing these grapes, to grow bad grapes that you can't even produce. So instead of taking the time from bud break to when you actually harvest the fruit, you press the fruit, you ferment the fruit, you barrel age it, and then you start to taste it. I mean, even in the crush process, you could taste it and see that it's not good product. Why? And the cost of having to harvest all that fruit just not to use it, just drop it to the ground, let those nutrients go back to the ground, rip the vines out, replant new vines as soon as possible. And then in at least 3 to 5 years, you can start making money again versus stretching it out maybe 2-3 years to see if it lightens up or if the conditions maybe change, which they won't. That just extends your time to when you can actually start making money again, which in effect will affect the bottom line of said winery, said farmer.
Wow, that's incredible. One thing on the airplane, did you notice the exhaust on that airplane when you flew it? Do you remember that?
To be honest, I could not remember where the exhaust was coming out from on that particular plane. I would have to imagine.
Yeah, there's a reason why I asked that question, because most people notice it right away on these camera planes. We service them a lot at my maintenance shop in Riverside.
And it stands out.
And it stands out. What they do is, I don't know if they have an STC or how they get it approved. Maybe they
just jerry-rig it.
That's also a possibility. Yes. Sometimes people do that.
It's a thing.
Yeah, it's a thing. But what they do is they basically build an additional exhaust. So they take the pipe that comes off, because normally the exhaust pipe just comes down from the front cowling, right? And it
really,
really right. short, and it just comes out and it goes underneath the airplane. Well, there's a problem with that. If it right. goes underneath the airplane, now you've got all the exhaust smoke
run to the camera.
Direct to the camera. So what they do is they create these like 15 feet long exhaust pipes.
It's funky looking tube with all sorts of different pieces connected to it. I mean, I'm assuming it's an STC because it looks so weird.
Yeah.
But it runs all the way
to the tail. So it totally gets rid of it. It's really, really cool. We'll send you a picture of one that we've worked out at the shop.
Please do. Yeah. Oh man. It was just an awesome experience to see just how aviation could help, you know, in the wine industry. Because if you think about it, a lot of these places, a lot of these farms, they had like 10 plus acres that had disease. And if you're talking 10 acres, I mean, you could break it down to 3 to 5 barrels of wine per acre. And each barrel has about 300 bottles. And when you're talking about a $225, $250 bottle of wine, that's a lot of money to, you know,
wow.
throw away,
to risk losing or just like put off or throw away, especially. So yeah, it was really cool to see.
I mean, imagine crushing all the bad grapes with the good ones. Then
you ruin everything. Yeah, the whole lot would be, that would be like exponentially worse.
Yeah,
exactly. Farming in the wine industry is very similar to farming in just any other kind of farming industry. Like you help your neighbor out because, you know, you all want to exist. You want to keep the farm in the family, you know? So that's why a lot of these big names that you will hear of, they've been in the family for that long. They want to keep it that way. So they, in a way, depend on each other in certain circumstances.
It's true. Well, Jonathan, thank you so much for taking the time today. It was fantastic kind of hearing about your brief journey into aviation personally, but how it kind of affects us wine drinkers and how it affects kind of the industry in a whole, especially when you're trying to save money. And being a finance company, Stratus Financial, helping student pilots, it's really important to save money and not go into massive amounts of debt to pursue your careers and your dreams. But as you could tell, it was needed at least a little bit to get you where you're at today. So I'm glad you took out those student loans. I'm sure they were a bit difficult to take care of, but it ended up helping you long term, just like Stratus helps other students today. Outside of that, we really appreciate you being on, like I said. It was fantastic to hear your story. I'm looking forward to when I go to Napa. I'm going to bring you a bottle of wine, one of the 60 that I bought last time. So hopefully, I got to bring you something besides Napa. I've got a beautiful Spanish Rioja, Grand Reserva, that is one of my favorites. That's a way better idea than bringing them a Napa one. You're right. I'll bring you one of those. And I've got a couple really good ports that are mind-blowing. I would love to share.
You're not a cigar fan by chance, are you?
I love cigars. Yeah.
I got a cigar for you. We can enjoy some port. That sounds like a fantastic. It's one of my favorite things to do after a long day. So definitely we can make that happen next time you're in town.
That's perfect. And I'm part of this private indoor club down here in Southern California. And I'll tell you about it in full offline. It has a private cigar lounge as part of it. It's got several restaurants, several bars. It's got activities and it's got a cigar lounge. So if you're ever in Southern California, I've got a cigar humidor locker in there. It is absolutely a blast to go into.
Excellent.
The blast part is pun intended. You'll get the reference. I'll tell you the rest of the story later on. But I'm looking forward to meeting you in person. It'd be a lot of fun to kind of hang out, and I'm gonna look forward to that cigar.
Definitely, definitely. That'll be fun. My mom actually lives in Southern California, so I'll make it a two birds with one stone type of trip.
We're in Huntington Beach. At least I'm in Huntington Beach, and our office is in Newport. So
cool.
Awesome. Well, Jonathan, thanks for being on. It's great to hear your story, and it's cool to see how, you know, you can merge aviation and wine. It's cool to see how the two meet. And we talk a lot about, you know, the careers that are out there too. And, you know, there's so many different things that aviation can take you to. It's going to take you everywhere, literally.
It really does. And Jonathan, if anybody wants to get a hold of you or reach you, can you tell us where we can find you, either an email or social media or anything like that?
My email, jpbastien, that's BASTIEN 40@gmail.com. Easy way to get a hold of me.
Awesome. Sounds good. Well, I'm sure somebody's going to reach out to you. If anything, they might just ask you for your recommendations in Napa, but I guarantee our listeners are great people. So I would take the time and reach out to them. So it's fantastic. Now, if you want to reach out to us at the Aviation Mentors Podcast, you know, as well as we always talk about it. If you want to reach out to us, you can reach us on our emails. It's Brandon@AviationMentors.com, Carson@AviationMentors.com, or for our producer, Mark, it is producer@AviationMentors.com. Also, don't forget to hit like, subscribe, follow on whatever streaming platform you listen to us on. It's really a huge part of helping our podcast community grow and the aviation community grow.
Well, everyone, as a wrap up for the day, remember, we're here to guide you in your aviation journey. So fly safe and enjoy the ride.
Yeah.